I almost hate to tell you, said Barnes slowly. And yet, Marie, you're the one person whom I can trust and who must know the truth. For weeks I've been sitting in front of a cafe doing nothing while Rothstern's agents watched me. In that time, I've built up an organization to take the place of our own. I saw the smash coming. Good as we are, we're nothing against these double-crossing rats who call themselves secret agents.
Apparently you've done the impossible, she said dryly.
I have. Everybody has overlooked a great bet. For 15 years, France has been the haven of Armenians, not the low-class peddlers we know at home, but people of the highest class. That man in Lyon was a graduate of the Sorbonne, Oxford, and Geneva. His father was an intimate friend of the Sultan before the war. The man who gave you the tickets in Nice was once a prince. These refugees have no country, no cause, no hope. I have given them all these things. One of them alone might betray me. Banded together, they would never betray one another. They have a cohesion of blood, of race. America helped the Armenians, and they remember this. I am cashing in on byproducts of past history. She drew a quick breath, her eyes dilated as she watched his keen, alert profile.
You? Who else?
No one else, except you. I figure on keeping the wrecks of our organization and using them, chiefly as a mask. Rothstern and the like will never look beyond to seek a second-degree organization.
Then you, single-handed, you are doing this.
Barnes smiled thinly. The Sphinx, my dear. The Sphinx, USA.
Who supplies the money?
I furnish some of it. Other Americans have contributed. I have friends who trust me, remember, and who ask no questions.
Either you are an absolute madman or a genius.
The gray eyes twinkled at her. Which do you say?
Both. Oh, it's wonderful. It's splendid.
She broke out passionately.
If only you can depend on these people.
I can. They have relatives, friends, all over France. They are like the Jews, a race absolutely banded together in ruin. They have an infinite genius for detail. I give one of my key men certain instructions. He arranges everything. I can hand one a message today in Paris, and it will be delivered in the most spy-proof manner that same night in Vienna, Naples, Marseille, Petrograd, and at the same identical moment. You see, the possibilities are vast, almost unlimited.
A sobering thought.
And you see why I've picked on you. Barnes glanced at her, laughing. Any other woman would have been mourning her clothes, her personal possessions, everything she'd lost. You don't. You're always a good campaigner.
Oh, we can always buy more, she exclaimed brightly. But don't you want that letter?
Barnes shook his head. Wait until we reach Dijon. It'll be in code. It was given Franklin for delivery to me by an Armenian in Rome.
So you're using codes which can always be broken down?
Barnes chuckled. I'm using the German code system, which has never been broken down and never will be. With an Armenian complex, it's invulnerable. You'll see.
She shrugged and relaxed on the cushions. It was nearly dark when they came into Dijon. Barnes did not want to arrive in full daylight. They avoided the Grand Hotel de la Cloche and, in a side street off the main Rue de la Liberté, halted before a small hostelry, the Hotel Burgundy.
We become brother and sister. The name is Smith. Passports are ready in that name, said Barnes. I'll take that letter, if I may. Meet you downstairs in half an hour.
She produced the letter Franklin had turned over, and they entered the little hotel, which had for lobby only the usual small office. Once in his own room, Barnes tore open the letter, which contained a single sheet of paper. On this were three lines of unbroken typing in capital letters. In 10 minutes he had reduced this to the cablese of newspaper correspondence, which he then amplified into familiar English. The result was very definite. Balkan tension holding up Abyssinian campaign, but preparations going steadily forward. League of Nations will control Yugoslavia. Airplane fleet preparing here for long flight. Mussolini had once sent a squadron of 20-odd ships across the Atlantic to America. He would be able to send a fleet of 50 bombers to Eritrea to act against the Ethiopians. No particular news here. Franklin might have lost this message without any dire consequences, thought Barnes angrily. Then he started at a sudden thought. He held the paper against the electric bulb in his room. Between the lines of typing appeared writing as the paper grew warm. He copied it swiftly, decoded this second and more secret message, then whistled softly. My brother at Marseille informs me that 2 Belgian ships cleared from there for Bombay, really for Djibouti, with immense quantities war supplies, consigned Addis Ababa. There, by glory, was something. Djibouti was the French port of Somaliland, whence the railroad ran to Addis Ababa, capital of Abyssinia. The French then were permitting war supplies to go through in defiance of all conventions. Why? Stumbling block. And Marie Nicolas had heard talk of those 2 ships. Belgian ships, and the Belgians had furnished drill masters for the Abyssinian army. Something here, something big, if only the key could be obtained. Hastily washing up, Barnes went downstairs and found Marie awaiting him in the lobby. They left the hotel. They were going to dine, he told her, at the Grand Tavern in the Rue de la Gare, near the railroad station. Riley, if he got through alive from Paris, was to meet them there about 8. It is a risk meeting him, of course, but it must be done, said Barnes. He has the key to all this business. Now, listen to what was in the letter. And he swiftly sketched the contents of the missive she had brought.
So what does it mean, then?
She asked.
I don't know. That's what Riley can tell us. Washington is involved somewhere. So is half Europe. Abyssinia is helpless but has money to burn, an important point. Well, here we are.
They entered the café, took a corner table within view of the door, and settled down to satisfy hunger.
Where did you leave the car?
Asked the girl.
In the street, handy for a quick getaway. Whether we'll stay the night, I can't say. Depends on Riley and Rothstern. Our fat friend isn't so slow, you know, Barnes added thoughtfully. We're taking chances stopping at hotels. By this time, our registration slip is at the police prefecture. Rothstern might figure you for Dijon, of course. We're bound to take chances any way you look at it. And he shrugged.
Have you anyone here? Any of your friends?
No.
Dinner arrived. As the meal drew to its close and 8 o'clock came and passed, Barnes grew more and more uneasy. Then the door opened. A gangling man with flaming red hair and clipped mustache entered and glanced around. He sighted Barnes, who rose.
"Hello, old chap," said Riley. "Ah, and Marie as well, eh? Glad to see you enjoying life. You won't very long."
He dropped into a chair and fired a rapid order at the waiter, who vanished.
"Trouble getting here?" asked Barnes.
"Nothing else but. I've been driving that old Ford of mine over half the back roads in France. You know what's happening to the gang?"
Barnes nodded. He liked this brisk, energetic Chicagoan.
"Sure, but we're not washed up yet. What have you for me? Spit it out."
"You're welcome to it,"
said Riley and grinned. From inside his hat, he brought a small envelope.
"And by the way, you'd better be prepared to hustle. 10 miles out of town, they caught me. I rammed their car into the ditch, but it'll mean that the net is spread here."
Barnes took the envelope and looked at Marie.
"Sorry, comrade. You'll have to wait to get the news. Will you slip back to the hotel, get my suitcase put into the car, and drive the car here? Tell the hotel people we're going to join friends at the Hotel de la Cloche. The rooms are paid for."
With a quick nod, the girl rose and swung away. Riley looked after her. His face was suddenly drawn and tired.
"A swell girl there," he said. "I'm done for. I'll stop here and let him grab me."
"You will not," said Barnes quickly. "You'll go with us. What's this thing?"
He tapped the envelope as he put it out of sight.
"Photostat of an agreement between Rothstern and that chap Fourville in the French Foreign Office," Riley said crisply. "Cost me $1,000 cash, but I got it a week ago. Fourville will be made the goat if it should become public, of course. The French government is really back of it. Ever hear of Abyssinia?"
"Once or twice," Barnes replied. "Anything to do with war munitions?"
Riley chuckled.
"You're not so slow, huh? Right, here's the layout. Hold on."
The waiter came with the ordered dishes. Riley, saying he had not eaten since morning, pitched in ravenously. When the waiter was gone, he spoke between bites.
For 3 months, Rothstern, on the basis of a secret agreement, has shipped munitions into Abyssinia. Made money hand over fist at it. That Italy's going to grab the country is no secret. France is bitterly jealous of her already. So is Germany. Mussolini is all burned up over the disaster of Adowa 40 years ago and means to avenge it. Well, he's going to run into another Adowa, that's all. The Italian army will be smashed. His prestige will never recover. Rothstern is behind the whole thing. A gigantic trap in the mountains. Get the picture? France then becomes the dominant power in Europe and so forth.
Holy smoke, exclaimed Barnes as he comprehended the reality. What's it got to do with Washington? We don't give a hang about Abyssinia.
Sure, grunted Riley. They've hung it on the Paris ambassador. He thinks it's swell. The Abyssinian envoy has let it be understood that America will guarantee the integrity of Abyssinia, which is all rot. But they've got Rothstern scared stiff about it, so the fat boy wants to find out about that treaty. He thinks we might stop Italy from grabbing. More rot. He wants Italy to grab, burn her fingers, and take a tumble.
I get you. What good is this photostat to us?
Proof. Our diplomatic corps doesn't dare touch it. The thing was swiped out of the French archives, you know. But any of us can handle it with the fervent blessing of Washington. If Mussolini gets it, he has proof that France is double-crossing him. You knew I was bringing you orders to meet Grimaldi in Ostend on neutral ground?
No, I was told to meet our ambassador there and take the treaty to London.
All hooey, brother. You're to do it, sure, but the important thing is to meet Grimaldi. He's Mussolini's best friend. We didn't dare reach him in Paris. You can do it in Ostend. Give him the photostat on condition Italy won't grab Abyssinia. If Grimaldi assents, Il Duce will probably stick to it.
Barnes saw the whole thing now. If Italy held off, that commercial treaty might or might not go through. All this was a job that no accredited diplomat could handle for a moment. Grimaldi, not the American ambassador, was the real work ahead of him.
I get you. Grimaldi might not agree, though.
He will if you tell him that Italy gets a 50-50 split in the treaty and a concession to build a railroad into Addis Ababa. The black boys will probably repudiate the whole thing even if Washington makes the treaty, but we should worry. Our game is to smash Rothstern, wheels within wheels, savvy?
Barnes nodded.
What a whale of a scheme. It saves Abyssinia's independence and yet profits all concerned. Who thought it all up?
Those blacks aren't so dumb, and Riley grinned. Look here, you'd better skip out. Leave me here to act as decoy.
Nothing doing. Come along. Marie must be outside by this time.
And Barnes beckoned the waiter. He paid his bill, and a moment later the two men left the restaurant together. As they went out the door, a man rose from a table on the other side of the room and made an abrupt signal. Two other men joined him, and all three hurriedly departed.
Chapter 4. Playing the Most Dangerous Game.
Riley, crowded into the roadster seat with Barnes and Marie, continued his sketch of the situation as Barnes headed out of the city.
You see, once the proof is in Grimaldi's hands, he's got Rothstern by the neck. And believe me, Mussolini would like to see that bird done for. France will have to sacrifice Rothstern, and so will Germany. They won't dare let him squawk. That's added incentive for us. We owe him something. Where are you headed for now?
Troyes, said Barnes. I'll have a man waiting there for me with news, food, and anything else needed, including gas. We'll get there long before midnight. Then on to the Belgian border.
I can't cross it, said Riley. You had better let me go.
Be hanged with you, Barnes snapped. I'll manage it somehow.
They got out of town without incident, and the powerful roadster began to eat up the miles of the highway as the rolling hills of Burgundy fled past.
Lights behind,
said Marie Nicholas presently. Although Barnes knew the road, it was strange to him at night. A hilly road with sharp curves and blind turns. Speed was impossible. Gradually, the following car lights crept closer.
Looks like a pinch, commented Riley. And those birds will shoot. They shot at me. That's why I rammed them off the road.
Barnes reached down with one hand, drew a pistol from the car pocket, and laid it in his lap.
This stuff has got to get through, he said grimly. If we're nabbed, you two step out and give up. You'll only get a week in jail at worst. Orders, understand?
The minutes passed. That the other car was the faster now became all too apparent. Barnes reflected swiftly and came to a decision. Alone, he might outrun or outfight the enemy, no matter which. They were not French police who would use pistols only as a last resource. But with Marie in the car, he could not risk her life so freely.
"Be ready to pile out," he said curtly.
The other car was close now, its lights holding them in full glare. Barnes slowed gradually. He ran along the edge of the road, giving plain evidence of his intention to stop. There was still a chance, of course, that the other car held nothing but tourists or fast travelers who wanted to pass. A honk-honk from behind as the pursuing car closed in and began to pass. It came alongside, roaring along without slowing. Then, the jets of fire, the crashing of the windshield, the barking explosions of pistols, a wild cry from Marie. Sheer blind fury seized Barnes. The whole windshield in front of him was shattered out. Glass flinders stung his face. Like a flash, he stepped full on the gas, snatched up his own pistol, and as the roadster spurted into a roar after the other car, he began to fire. Shot after shot, steadily, always in the one place. Suddenly a scream drifted back to him. Then a chorus of voices. The car ahead veered, skidded off the road, went slap-bang into a tree with a terrific crash. One of his bullets had found the driver. The roadster shot past. Barnes looked back once, saw no flames, and grimly held his course. To hell with them. They could take the consequences so long as their car had not caught a fire.
"Marie, hurt?"
"No, no," came her gasp. "But Riley, you'll have to stop."
Barnes slowed and presently ran to a stop. Like all European cars, this one had a right-hand drive. Thus, the other two had acted as shields for him against those bullets. And one had found Riley. The red-headed Chicagoan was dead. Had died at once, for a bullet had gone through his head.
"What'll we do?"
exclaimed Marie, careless of the gashes in her arm from the shattered glass.
"We can't leave him here."
"No, you drive. I'll hold him. We're well on our way to Troyes. I'll leave him with my man there who will take care of it. The body can't be shipped home in any case. Anyone who dies from violence must remain buried in France. That can all be taken care of later. The main thing now is to get on." They went on.
It was a grim ride. Barnes sent his thoughts flitting ahead, groping with what might lie across the border. No such danger from the police as here. The whole French bureaucracy was riddled with graft and corruption and scandal. Belgium was another thing. He could understand why Riley had held this photostat for days, no doubt in the hope of getting it to the Italian embassy, but in vain. Rothstern had paralyzed the little band of American volunteers. For Rothstern knew of this photostat. What an incredible devil of mental agility, of information, of secret sources that fat man must be. He had learned of this. He knew his own peril. He even knew or guessed that it was to reach Grimaldi on the Ostend musical expedition. Barnes voiced his thoughts as Marie sent the roadster roaring on. She had the whole story in her mind now.
"If I'm stopped, you must carry on," he said. "The photostat is in my inside right coat pocket. You must put through the deal if I fail. Understand?"
"Yes,"
she said simply. The one word held volumes.
"Get the thing straight. Rothstern probably knows what I don't know, that I'm picked to meet the American ambassador in Ostend and carry that treaty over to London, where it can be in the diplomatic pouch without danger. That arrangement is, of course, a mask. I'm to meet Grimaldi, or someone is, with this photostat and make the deal. And Rothstern surely knows of the photostat."
"But you're to meet the American ambassador, too?"
"Naturally. That can be done openly enough without danger. There is probably going to be a whole diplomatic gathering at this musical affair next Friday. Which reminds me, I must arrange about tickets. It'll be held at the Kursaal, of course. That's the big concert place in Ostend. My man at Troyes will attend to it."
"Are you going to explain that coat to me?"
"Yes, the minute we have an hour to ourselves. Over the border."
"Shall we get over?"
"We must.
Troyes was at last on the horizon, and the ghastly ride was presently at an end, and poor Riley at peace. This was in a furtive little street behind the hotel terminus, where a plump, grey-bearded man and his two sons saw to everything. He put into the roadster a hamper of food and wine, and when Barnes introduced the girl to his unpronounceable name, he bowed to her like a courtier.
"Mademoiselle, I am honored. You behold but a damned dirty dog of an Armenian, as they called me at Eton in my youth. Yet we Armenians may have our uses, eh? Here, Mr. Barnes, our telegrams. One, I fear, will cause you sadness."
They drove on, Marie taking the wheel while Barnes looked at the telegrams.
"I suppose," she asked, "that man was a prince or something?"
"Eh? Oh, not at all," said Barnes. "He was a multimillionaire before the war. Look here. McGibbons was killed today in Warsaw. An automobile accident."
"McGibbons?" she echoed in dismay. "Sandy McGibbons? Oh."
"Exactly. One of our best men. Accident? Not a bit of it." The voice of Barnes was grim. "Now we've come down to murder. Poland, remember, is a close ally of Germany in the new alignment. Our other news isn't so good either. Truxen left Nice today and landed in Paris this afternoon by air. Stacy was with him. Rothstern went on the same train from Lyon to Paris. Gave you up as a bad job, evidently. Once we get out of town, I'll drive. Tired?"
"Not a bit,"
she lied bravely. Troyes fell behind. A meal as they drove, with hot coffee and a dash of cognac from the hamper, made the cold night look different. Spare gasoline was in the luggage compartment. Later, they filled the tank. It was a mad, wild flight through the morning hours. Dawn found them speeding forward with Marie huddled up asleep. Sunrise at last, and in the golden morning they rolled up to the frontier station of the Douane. And Barnes adroitly conveyed a 1,000-franc note to the customs inspector in a packet of cigarettes. 10 minutes later, they were in Belgium unhindered. Even the broken windshield had drawn no suspicion.
"Now what?"
asked the girl.
"On to the city of Mons. Then hotel, sleep, rest. Buy whatever we need. No hurry."
And Barnes uttered a gay, joyous laugh.
"Today is Wednesday. We'll stop here till morning, get the windshield replaced, and drive on to Ostend tomorrow. Comrade, we've done it."
"At a price,"
she murmured. Barnes lost his cheery air. His face darkened.
"Right. Let me tell you something. When I fight fire with fire, I don't use water. Rothstern murdered Riley and McGibbons, and that signed his death warrant. You can pull out of my game if you don't like it. Fair warning."
She eyed his harsh, strong features with their hint of savage determination, and nodded. She made an answer with quiet restraint.
"You're not the man you were. Not the same. You're getting bigger, if not better. You're going far, and I'm trailing along, thanks."